Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, there's still time to join us live on the call. Pick up your phone and dial 347-884-8327. Tonight is going to be about just questions and answers. I have almost nothing prepared. We've been on the road for the last couple days, and I haven't had time to read or prepare anything, so tonight it's your chance to ask whatever question you want to ask. In fact, there are lots of lines open for questions right now. So if you want to jump in, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will pick those up and screen those. And what we're going to do is once we get some questions rolling here, we are going to start doing a recorded hour for tonight. Again, we are on the road. So we're going to combine the podcast tonight and tomorrow with our recorded hour for the SiriusXM show. So questions and answers, and there's room available for you to jump in right now. Press 1 on your phone, and we'll start getting to those calls here in just a couple minutes. Again, if you're listening online, there's still room to get in, 347-884-8327. If you're on the call, there's lots of room for questions right now. So press 1 on your phone, and we'll start getting to those here in just a couple minutes. Quick rundown of the load boards and what's going on. It looks like, for the most part, the week was absolutely flat. Not a whole lot happened anywhere. The spot market load index is off 0.5%. Nothing to even think about. The truck index was off 0.8%. Not even really measurable. Dry van load to truck ratio was up 0.6%. Flatbed load to truck ratio had the biggest move, and that really wasn't much. It's off 2.8%. Reefer load to truck ratio was off 0.4%. So next to nothing going on as far as changes in the load boards, the truck load to truck ratios for the week, pretty flat. Actually a good thing. It's possible we may see some slowdown in that over the next couple weeks, but looks pretty good right now. Let's see. Still some room on here if you want to jump in. If you're listening online, 347-884-8327. We've got some questions coming in now, but there's still plenty of room. So if you've got a question, press 1, and we're going to start taking those here right now. We're going to do it as a recorded hour. So here we go. Let's get into that.
Your truck and your road is
Good evening and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Rutherford and this is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. I'm here tonight and every night to improve your bottom line and make you more successful. We talk about the things that are important to you, your business, your money, your life, and your success. Thanks for joining me, allowing me to ride along with you for an hour tonight. I consider it my mission on this show to bring you the very latest information to help you be more successful, make more money, save more money, and avoid scams and ripoffs. We can talk about trucks, money, retirement accounts, fuel mileage, maintenance, health insurance, technology, taxes, financial planning, current events, politics, or anything else you'd like to bring to the show. Speaking of politics, less than 3 weeks away from elections. Do you have it taken care of? Do you know how you're going to vote? Are you registered to vote? Do you have your absentee ballot? Whatever it takes, get involved this year. Get one way or the other. It doesn't really matter what you believe in, who you believe in. Do a little bit of homework. At least be educated about who you're going to vote for and understand what they're all about. But then get out and vote one way or the other. You know, it's really a shame that the voter numbers have dropped off so far that we're just not the ones running our country anymore if we're not casting our vote. And if you're not at least voting, you really have no room whatsoever to complain one way or another what goes on in politics. So get involved. Make sure you're paying attention now. Are you registered? Do you have your absentee ballot? Do you know what the dates and the deadlines are? Don't wait anymore. We've got less than 3 weeks before that's going to happen. Let's go to the phones. Let's start off tonight in Missouri. Norman, welcome to the program.
If we got a reduction in our hours of service, which looks like could happen perhaps, what do you think that would do to freight rates?
When you say that we're going to get a reduction in hours of service, two things you could be referring to. You're referring to an actual change in the hours of service laws again that would change the hours, or the fact that we may be required to use electronic logs, which would make sure everybody was legal, and that certainly isn't going to add any time. It could only take time away. Which one are you referring to?
Well, now that you bring it up, both. I'm on electronic logs, and I absolutely love them. I would never want to go back to that paper pencil nonsense. Ridiculous.
It's so funny because if you talk to people about this, they are absolutely, I mean, really, really strongly emotionally against it. I mean, across the board, that seems to be the response I get and the response I've seen. And yet, almost everybody I talk to that's already on them seem to love them. I don't understand where the disparity is coming from, why there's such a big difference. I was at the TCA, I don't even know which event it was, last year. And they had three contractors there, and they were, they were like contractor of the year for their particular carrier, I think was how it worked through TCA.
Uh-huh.
And they were there throughout the meeting, you know, in the meetings, and at the very end, they were on a panel, and the carriers, the fleet executives, were asking them questions. It was kind of an interesting, you know, give and take, and one of the last questions was about EOBRs. Now, these are three, obviously, top-notch owner-operators to make it to that position. They were all three very well-spoken, very intelligent, ran good businesses, and all three of them said, if they mandate EOBRs, we will sell our truck and get out of the business. They were that strong about it. And I was just a little shocked. I mean, I don't like them. I don't like any more government intrusion. But I guess I'm surprised at the difference between the people who absolutely say, no way, I'll never do it, and then the people who are doing it say they love it. And I hear that a lot.
You may not believe this, but there's a few people in our country, their hatred for government blinds them to anything else. So anything to do with government, they hate it. And that's all there is to it, I guess. You know, I consider the computer logging not logging because I'm really not. I'm not logging. All I do is look at a little number, and it tells me when I can drive and when I can't. There is no logging to do.
Well, and I think that's their point. They don't want to be told. But what's really interesting is it's almost like focusing on the wrong issue. The hours of service were established a long time ago, and that tells us really when we can drive and when we can't. So really this isn't telling us when we can drive or when we can't. I mean, the hours of service have already done that. This is just monitoring it, which is the second thing people don't like. People don't like being told what to do, so they figure with the hours of service they'll just do what they want to do and then, you know, log it to be legal. Here, they really feel like they're not only being told what to do, but they're being monitored, you know, while they're doing it. I think that's the biggest problem. But let's get back to your original question, which is what would either one of these or both combined do to rates?
I was actually thinking about if we got a reduction in our drive time more than the EOVRs.
Well, and actually let's combine them because it looks like they're both potentially possible. We could get a reduction if they go back into the hours of service again and start screwing around with it. And with the OBRs coming, that would technically, I mean, we have to believe that the majority of people, if they're not running legal, it means they're driving more than they should be. So this would have to cut down on available hours, not the other way around. It's supply and demand. I mean, I can't predict exactly what's going to happen, but any time we reduce the supply, which is our capacity, the available freight, the available capacity to move freight, meaning we have to have a driver, a truck, a trailer, and the hours to move that. That is our supply in this industry. That our ability to move freight is our supply. Both of those things would cut down on the supply, which would have to increase demand, which has to raise rates.
You know, you said something interesting, capacity. I always took capacity to mean trucks and drivers. I never even thought about hours, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you know, the only thing we can do to overcome a lack of hours would be to add more trucks and more drivers, and that's really tough to do in this industry. I mean, for one, it's really expensive to add equipment, and two, I mean, it seems like any time demand goes up a little bit, we already have a shortage of drivers, but they claim there is anyway. And the only way to overcome that is to pay more. Well, the only way to pay the driver more is to demand more in the rate. So, you know, as much as we might not like it, it really does have to drive rates up, if nothing else.
Yeah. If adding trucks was the answer, I don't think Swift would have lost $700 million over the last couple of years. So I think a lot of trucking companies have been bit hard by just add trucks. We'll make money that way. If you can't pull freight profitably, pulling more freight unprofitably will only make it worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have seen that, and it's getting worse because equipment is getting not only much more expensive to buy because of emission regulations, but much more expensive to maintain because of emission regulations. So it's no longer quite that easy to just go out and replace equipment.
Yeah. Very good, Kevin. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic, and hours and EOBRs and what it might do. Like it, love it, hate it. I'm not a fan of government getting any more involved in anything. I think we're far over-regulated already in way too many ways. But as far as rates go, logically, if you cut down on our supply, our capacity, which any change to reduce hours of service or to monitor them more closely would reduce the supply of the ability to move freight, which increases demand, has to raise rates. All right, I'm going to get to a break. We've got more coming up, so stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, the lines are, there's a few lines open, not many. If you're still listening online, you can jump in and grab one of those, 347-884-8327. As far as questions, though, I've only got a couple showing up on the board, so now is your chance. If you've always thought it's too hard to get through with a question, plenty of available lines for questions. So if you're listening right now, you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, want to talk about something totally different, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen those calls, and we'll be getting to them here. Well, we're going to get back to the recording right now, so here we go. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Virginia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey there.
Hey, I want to ask you about the OPS. I had the OPS put on my truck, and they sent out the 8-inch filters. So.
Okay.
When do I change the filters on the 8-inch filters? Are they 15,000 or is it 25,000 on that 8-inch filter?
You know, the idea when they first brought this out was that the 8-inch filter was going to be, you know, roughly a 15 or 20,000 mile filter change, and the 10-inch was going to be a 25. And it seems like both of them are going farther than that. It seems like a lot of people with the 8-inch filters can actually go 25,000 miles. What I would recommend, have you been changing your oil at 15?
Yeah.
I would recommend doing your first 8-inch filter change at 15,000. Check the sample.
Okay.
Call me if you want when you get the sample and we'll go over it. And there's a pretty high likelihood that you'll be able to extend that. And we'll look at it and maybe say instead of 15, do the next one at 20. And we'll look at it at 20, and if it's still clean, maybe move it out to 25, even with the 8-inch filters.
Okay, when I send that sample back to OPS, will it automatically go in your system?
It will. All you have to do is usually no longer than 7 days from the time you drop it in. You can call us either on the podcast or the live show. This one's a little easier to get through. And when Lisa screens your calls, she'll look it up in the system to make sure it's there. And then when you talk to me, we'll go over the results.
Okay, what about getting more? Can I get another, like when I get through with the other 8-inch filters that they sent me and I get ready to drop my oil and put all synthetic in? I got like 3 gallons of synthetic in now. It's like a blend.
Okay.
Can I call and order a whole other kit without the system, maybe like another set of filters? the 10-inch filters and the oil sample kits and all? Do you have a kit that they can send me out without the system?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. You can buy them. I think the cutoff for a discount is like 6 packs. You get 6 of everything, filters, sample kits, mailers, all that stuff.
Okay, well, I'm coming up on 15,000 miles now. I'll go ahead and get that done this weekend and send it in then and change that filter.
Yeah, that sounds good. Pull that first one at 15, and let's just take a look to see how it's doing.
Okay. All right, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Georgia this time. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Good evening.
Good evening. What's on your mind tonight?
That first caller got me to call in. You know, the whole reason why I started driving a truck to begin with is because I got tired of a private sector boss looking over my shoulder, telling me what to do and when to do it. I really want to trade that in for a government agency telling me what to do, when to do, looking over my shoulder. He had me pegged. Damn right I don't like government. Government is a necessary evil. The government that governs least governs best. And, yeah, he's right. I hate government. I wish we didn't have to have it, but we do. I can see that. We got to have government. They don't have to be in every nook and cranny of our lives. That's basically all I got to say about that.
Do you have anything else to say, or do you want to keep talking about that, or is that it?
Well, I always want to put in a fair tax now. Remember November. By the way, we're just a little over 2 weeks away from the election. Is that right? 2 weeks from Tuesday?
Yesterday. Yeah, you say a little over 2 weeks. I said a little under 3.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right, because it's 3 weeks from yesterday, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got it. Hey, you know, we talked about the letter from Charlie Daniels, and I posted it up on the website. And I don't want to go back through and rehash it again, but I know there are a lot of drivers who don't get to their emails and it takes them a while. And I just got another response back on it today. And, you know, this sounds like an intelligent person, but, and I'm certainly not going to give any names as far as who wrote this, but the tone of this, let me read it to you and you know, see what you feel about just the overall tone of this. It says, I do not agree that Obama is a failure at all. He has done the best that he could to avoid a huge disaster. And if he has done it in a different way than we think he should have, then so be it, because he is in charge and it seems to be working. The country is in better shape now because of decisions made and actions taken by the current administration. And now we benefit from a recovery, and we take the freedom to become arrogant in the white supremacy way of life again. Now he's going back to the whole Charlie Daniels thing, and then he goes on and it gets even more religious, which there's nothing wrong with that part of it. It's just the overall tone of it. It's very almost subservient. I mean, we can't question anybody in charge.
Well, unless it's a Republican.
The
first question that came to my mind is, he kept talking about the country and it's in better shape. I never heard him mention the United States of America. I kind of wonder what country is he talking about, because he sure wasn't describing this country.
No, in fact, in the last 2 years, our spending is up 21.4%. 21% increase in spending is unbelievable. And that's in a time with a slow economy, so that means revenue is way down. Obviously, the government's collecting less in taxes because there isn't, that we don't have the commerce to generate taxes. So the revenue has to be way down. They're spending 21% more.
If they allow what's become known as the Bush tax cuts to expire, revenues to the government will immediately be less. because that'll put such a damper on commerce. There'll be a lot less prosperity than we even have now, a lot less profit, a lot less salaries for people to pay taxes on. You think we're looking at deficits now, just let those tax cuts expire, and we're going to have deficits like we never imagined. I mean, we already have that, but even with this frame of reference, it'll still be get worse than we could imagine, because revenues to the government will decrease. Everybody will be worse off, including the government. Why they would
Absolutely.
Even consider letting the tax cuts expire in the middle of a deep recession is just
yeah.
You have to be trying to destroy the economy of this country, the United States of America. I wish I could think of another reason why they'd be behaving this way. But that's the only reason I can come up with, is they want to intentionally destroy the country. Come on, give me another reason, Kevin. I don't want to believe that.
No, I can't give you another reason because there isn't one. You're right. When you have to keep looking at the facts, and at some point the facts just point to that's the only logical outcome. Here's the sentence I want to pull out of this, and it says, and if he has done it in a different way than we think he should have, then so be it, because he is in charge. That's not the way our government works. It's almost like, do we really call any elected politician our leader? I mean, I understand he's you know, commander in chief. I get all of that, but commander in chief, that talks about military, which is one of the big roles of our government is military. And I understand that. We do need a leader there. But when it comes to policy, for us to sit back and say, well, the government may be doing it different than we think they should, but so be it, we're in trouble if people think that way.
Well, I think the only people who think that way are people who are bound and determined to see President Obama being viewed as successful. They just... You know, some people voted for Obama. You don't want to admit you made a mistake. So, you know, they imagine this person would have never said the same thing about Bush. I hate to make that judgment, but I'm just assuming that you know, when Bush was in charge, so to speak, that he wouldn't have said, hey, he's the president. We got to do whatever he says. Here's what the president is, first and foremost. He is our servant. And when he ever starts thinking of himself as anything else, we are screwed.
That goes for every elected official. We don't work for them or answer to them. It's the exact opposite. They need to answer to us, and that's what we've got to get back to. And I appreciate the call and the conversation. Good and stimulating as always. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more questions. Stick around. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. The website is letstruck.com, and we're talking about whatever it is you want to talk about tonight. So let's get right back to the callers. We're going to head to Texas this time. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. What's on your mind?
Yeah, talking about the last couple of callers. Hugh, right on, Hugh. Fair tax now. But unfortunately, we are probably going to be looking, at reduction in the hours. It looks like we'll probably be getting the hours of service proposal in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And from what I've been hearing, it looks like it's probably going to lose that 1 hour of driving, which I hate to lose. But something that Ann Ferro said during those listening sessions, because she heard a lot about a little flexibility, the 14 hours being 14 hours and, us getting held up at shippers, receivers, and that kind of thing. It seems like from what she was saying, she said they wanted to give a little more flexibility, but they wanted to have total proof we weren't cheating. I take it from what I've been hearing, they may give you a chance to have a 2 hour break, which would also stop the clock. But then, that would help you a little bit. But she said she didn't want us cheating, so I have a feeling along with it will come probably a mandate for some onboard reporters. And that's kind of what it seems to me it's looking like. But I, like you, believe it will create a shortage of available boxes for the amount of hours we can drive them out here, and I think that should help with the rates. It should help with the balance, the load and box balance that you always talk about,
And here's my take on this, I guess, because government obviously has been more and more controlling over the years, and we're seeing it now in this administration, and I don't like it. I don't want anybody to think that I ever do. I don't want anybody to think that I'm ever giving in. But here's the other thing. Government is going to do what government is going to do. My first priority will always be me. What am I going to do to make sure I still get the things I want? I right now I have to work within whatever they're going to decide. That doesn't mean I'm giving in to them. It just means that I have to decide where my energies are best spent. I don't want to get out of trucking because anywhere you go, the government's going to regulate us somehow. It's just going to be different in some other industry. My God, if you're in the food service industry, forget it. There's so much regulation there, or insurance, or medical, or any industry you go to, they're going to be in. So I'm not going to let them chase me out of the industry that I love. That's the first thing that's not going to happen. They can mandate this, and I'm not leaving. I will figure out how to make money, and that's my first priority. My second priority will be to do everything I possibly can, vote, talk about it, get active, whatever, to try to get our government back to the way I believe it should be. Less government, smaller government, less regulation. I'll still fight for those things, but it will always be my second priority. And it has to be, because I could devote my entire life to that cause. I could spend every working minute on that cause, and I would still have very little effect on my own. So I have to set my priorities first to make that second.
Yeah. Well, I think also, I think I'm like you. I find out what the rules are. I know we got to live within them. But then I figure out what I must do to maximize what I can do to take more money home for my family within those rules. And
The
only thing I'm hoping for is that everybody that says they're going to quit and go home, if they do that, it's going to create a very, very nice driver and box shortage out here, and we will have better rates. That's the only thing we can hope for, is most people do go through with what they're talking about, but I think in the end they probably won't. But you do have to find what you have to do to maximize your operation to take home more money.
Yeah, for me, I'm not going to let them chase me out of this industry. I'm going to stand and fight, and while I'm fighting, I'm going to learn how to be as profitable as I can with whatever rules they change. When the hours of service changed the last time, and, sitting here listening to you kind of thinking, what might happen, it almost sounds like we're going back to what we had before, or darn close to it, which isn't necessarily...
We won't be able to split everything like we did before. Before, we got away with a lot of stuff. Everybody did. But with the 8 and 2, that's all you can split now. There's not a whole lot you can get away with unless you're very, very sharp, and there's too many things that can come back to bite you now with onboard recorders, with bills now, bills of lading that have printed times on them, things like that. We have to run a lot. We're running a lot more legal. I'm running totally legal because I've got a master satellite. But I found it cost me about 4 or 5% when we had to do that. But I figured out, you know what? I had to maximize what I did within that to make the amount of money that I need. So I do maximize it. And, that's what you have to do. Figure out what the rules are and then figure out where you can go to be all the way to the edge of the rules. And that's it.
I agree, and that's really, you know, kind of my point to everybody is, yeah, let's fight government. I don't want to see this happen. I want to see less regulation. I want to see a smaller government. We have to do it by the people that, you know, we're voting in. I mean, that's our only control. We have very little say. I mean, we can certainly call in anytime there are hearings, and we should be doing that, and we should be getting active in that way, but we can't directly affect these kind of decisions as much as we can affect these decisions by who we elect, because it's our elected officials that ultimately vote on these kind of things. We don't get a direct say. We don't get a direct vote. That's not the way our country is set up, and I don't want it set up that way. I like the way we're set up, but we have to work within that, which means we have to work with the people that we elect. Let's go to, Mike in South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. I had a question about glider kits and rejuvenating older trucks, such as the one that you're presently working on.
Yes.
I retired from the car business after 30 years and praised a few vehicles in my lifetime. And the one thing I came to realize very quickly is that the value of a vehicle is tied to its age and its mileage and overall general condition. You're rejuvenating a truck. I think you said it was a 97?
Correct.
Okay, 13-year-old truck probably had, what, 1 million miles on the odometer?
1.5 million miles. Million and a half.
What kind of a value will an insurance company put on that for replacement cost purposes? Because everything I know is when you appraise a vehicle, you've got a book, you've got auction prices, you've got retail prices and all, and you're talking, I think you said you had a budget of about $60,000 for this truck. How much money will the insurance company insure a rejuvenated vehicle for to protect you and your asset that you've invested so much in?
Right now, if we did nothing, if we just went and applied for insurance on a 97, they would probably value it if it got stolen the next day at about $6,000 if we were lucky. So it's a very good question and a very good concern, but we're working with the insurance companies to let them know what we're doing, and the insurance companies will write actual value policies.
Regular commercial companies in the United States will do that, you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, we're working with a couple right now to get that done. And I guess I shouldn't say that because we haven't had somebody write that policy yet, but our initial response from the insurance company after we explain the program to them, why we're doing it, how much money we'll have invested in it, and the reasons for it, our initial response has been, yes, we could write a policy that would protect you. And it really shouldn't be that expensive. Here's why. Here's the screwy thing about insurance in this industry, is if I go buy a truck today for $60,000 and I value it at $60,000, they charge me so many dollars per $1,000 of value. So if I want to insure a $60,000 truck, it costs twice as much as a $30,000 truck and four times as much as a $15,000 truck. I mean, it is literally so many dollars per thousand of value. But that's not what my coverage really is.
Right.
Which is I've complained about that in the industry for years because we're really getting cheated when it comes to insurance. They'll charge us for that much value, but they won't give us that much value back in the policy. So really all we're asking them to do is, look, if you're going to charge us for $60,000 worth of coverage, then I want $60,000 worth of coverage. Really shouldn't get any more expensive. But we'll give an update on that when we finally get a policy done, hopefully soon. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Good evening. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Trucking Business and Beyond. We're going right back to the phones. We're going to head off to Miami this time. Matt, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Kevin.
Good evening. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I did a little catching up on some podcasts that I missed, and I finally got to listen to one with you and Dale about the winter driving tips.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to add a few things in there. You didn't mention about the air dryer, and just so happened, I bought my truck in September, and well, through different things, my DOT is due in October, so
okay.
It works out just perfect. I do a lot, all my fall maintenance, everything right at the same time of the year the DOT is due, right before winter. And
right.
I can't believe that, you know, I do it myself, but the parts alone for the cartridge, the heating element, and there's one other thing in there, but it's like $70 or $80 to service an air dryer, and I got the great big one, more expensive
right.
one.
Right.
Why everybody doesn't do that every year is just beyond me.
You know, that's a good point. I know there are many people out there that don't ever service an air dryer till it just fails.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky enough, I pull the same trailer 95% of the time, and
right.
I never added airline antifreeze to my system. I just drain the tanks and, you know, in the fall and put the new air dryer on and never had a problem.
Well, you know, and you've got one of those runs that, you know, you're pretty well dedicated, and you've got one of the worst runs going as far as maintenance, airlines, that kind of stuff, because you go from probably one of the coldest parts of the country to one of the hottest parts of the country at that time of year, and it's that temperature change that'll just wreak havoc with an air system.
Yep, I could get condensation in real easy, and yeah, fuel is
right.
Fuel's an issue because I just I changed my tanks around. I took off my hydraulic tank and all that, and I added another 100-gallon fuel tank. So
okay.
I now have 400-gallon fuel capacity.
Wow.
So in a round trip, I only fuel twice. And that's from running from Minnesota all the way down to Miami and back. And in reality, if I could get up to 8 miles to the gallon, I could probably fuel twice 1 week and once the following week if I ran through a full
yeah.
tank of fuel, but.
Right.
I'm happy with my 7 miles to get on with my truck. Keep working at it.
Yeah. 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 And your truck is pretty amazing. But, you know, you've got the same issue because, you know, we're not getting the same fuel in Minnesota that we are in Florida when it's in January.
That's probably right now, you know, and this is my main reason for doing it, is the regional fluctuation of fuel prices.
Right.
I mean, right now I'm buying fuel in Florida for almost 20 cents less a gallon after you take the tax out.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'll make sure I get every drop I can in Florida and only buy what I have to up north. But then in the wintertime,
yeah.
I just have to bite the bullet and buy the more expensive fuel. So when I'm home for a week, my truck starts.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then one other thing is windshield washer fluid. which is something I'm sure nobody really thinks about. But when you're running up north, you can't have windshield washer fluid you bought down south that's only good for 10 degrees.
True.
It'll freeze right in the lines, and you get into a sloppy road, and all of a sudden they don't work because your lines are froze up.
Yeah, that's another good point. You know, and really, I don't know if you saw it. It's probably still up on the website somewhere. Dale put together a great outline of all these winter driving tips, really good stuff. And then Lisa took it, formatted it really nice, and made it look nice, and they posted it. And there was so much information on there. And when we did this show, man, I'll bet we didn't even cover a tenth of what was on there. But the show just flew by, and, you know, you get talking about a topic, and then you get off topic, but we didn't even come close to covering all the stuff he put together, and the ones, you know, you brought up just now are great tips.
Yeah. Well, that's another show I highly recommend doing another one of when you get around to it. Information. One other question about the OPS, with the Echo Pier and the larger filters.
Yeah.
Do you recommend with a 10-inch filter and a 25,000-mile interchange to go to 25,000 miles on a sample, or you still sample at 15?
I'm saying right now, and I'm doing it myself, I'm sampling at 25 as long as there are no issues.
Okay.
You know, the first time I catch an issue, fuel, glycol, any elevated metal, then I would certainly scale that back until we got it figured out.
That's the only, that's what I was concerned, is just, 25,000 miles, if something happened, it'd be pretty major to cause a problem in that amount of time, but...
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way a little bit, and then I thought, you know, look, if we had a fuel intrusion that was bad enough to do damage in 25,000 miles, we're going to see it somewhere else first. I mean, we're going to
see the oil increasing by that point,
yeah. Yeah, and if we catch it at... Even if it started right after we did a filter change and it went a full 25,000 miles, if it wasn't bad enough to show up in the truck or the performance or some other way, then when we catch it at 25, we're still safe.
Yeah. Well, my biggest concern is I'm kind of a part-timer right now. I'm only taking 2 trips a month, so I'm down to about 8,000 miles a month, so that's 3 months worth of work that...
Yeah.
To get the 25,000, so.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, you look at the newer engines, the DD15 with a 50,000-mile service, and I still haven't heard for sure on the PACCAR engine. But at one point, I remember reading the PACCAR engine was going to have a 75,000-mile service interval, and that's without any sampling at all.
Yeah, I think I've read that, too. Did you see that someone posted something about the new Kenworth T700, I believe is the number? I don't remember the model, but the MX, the Paycar motor. Right out of the bat, brand new truck, and this was cross country. It was it's a Canadian article in a Canadian Challenger motor line.
Okay.
But 8.1 miles to the gallon.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm really interested in that engine. I want to see it when we get it out there and get it running.
Yeah, so definitely one to, as the numbers start coming out, to pay attention to.
There you go. Hey, I appreciate it. I'm going to move along, try to squeeze in some more calls here. Let's go to Jim in Illinois. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. On one of your other calls there, you were talking about the insurance and what they would pay on a older vehicle. First, I can tell you firsthand about that. I had an older KW, and I increased the insurance on it by $10,000 because I put a major overhaul on it. My driver drove it 400 miles and totaled it out, and my insurance company did pay the extra money that I put on it. All I had to do was verify that I did do the work and the truck was worth the extra money that I put on it by doing the major overhaul.
Perfect. Perfect. And that's really kind of the answer we're getting back from the insurance company. As long as we can verify the money invested and that kind of stuff and we're paying for the extra coverage, then we'll get it.
Yep. And what I really called you about was I've got another older KW that it's a 93 model, and I need to do a major on it. It's not worth a lot of money, the truck, unless I would put some money into it and run it out. But I can buy a overhaul kit, not through Detroit. It's a 60 series Detroit, but it's a PAI overhaul kit. Have you ever heard of that overhaul kit?
I haven't, and you know, we always have to be a little careful with aftermarket, third party, that kind of stuff, but sometimes that might fit our budget or what we're trying to accomplish. Like you said, it's an older truck. If you're not really planning on keeping this thing long term, but you want to keep it running for another couple years, it may make sense. I don't know of that one in particular, though.
I looked it up on the internet, and everything about it, everybody talks about it, has nothing but good things to say. The people selling, of course, talk real good about it.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, because I've got to get to a break, but I want to come back to you. So hold on. Oh, you know what? I can't come back to you. We're all out of time for this hour. Well, we'll try to do it again. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. You're on the Road Dog, Sirius 147, XM 171. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Get out and vote. Don't forget.